Hey everyone, husband here.
And I'm wife. If you've been listening to us, then you know we're all about reading the Bible and reacting to it on our first read-through. Cuss words, crying, laughing, and more.
We're passionate about creating a podcast that takes the sanctity out of the sacred text and simply stating it as we see it.
But we can't do it without your help. We're asking for your support to help us keep this podcast going.
There are two ways you can donate.
Text SACDIS, that's SACDIS, to 533-555 if you're in the U.S. with a one-time donation. Any amount helps.
Or if you'd rather start a sustaining membership, sign up on our Patreon page at patreon.com/sacrilegiousdiscourse. Membership levels start as low as $2 a month.
We are amazed and grateful for our fans that support us now, and you can become one too.
With your support, we can keep Sacrilegious Discourse alive and well for years to come.
So please donate today.
Text SACDIS to 533-555 if you're in the U.S.
Or sign up for our Patreon page at patreon.com/sacrilegiousdiscourse. Welcome to Sacrilegious Discourse.
I'm husband.
And I'm wife.
Together we're reading the Bible for the very first time.
We grew up without religion and wanted to know what all the fuss was about.
Well, what have we learned so far?
That God is a dick. And apparently some people believe in talking donkeys?
We're not trying to pass ourselves off as experts.
Nope, we're just reading the Bible for the first time and giving our first take reaction.
If you'd like to join us in this venture, you might consider starting at episode 1.
Otherwise, jump in wherever you like.
Alright, let's go read the Bible.
Yeah, let's get to it. Husband!
Wife!
Do you know what the fuck we're doing today?
We are running way the fuck behind. And we did a part one yesterday-ish.
I don't know,
like a day and a half ago. I don't even fucking know.
Whenever it went out.
But like, you have been overwhelmed with research.
Yeah.
And so everything has gone haywire with the end of Jeremiah.
I'll never ever do this again. Put 5 chapters, a wrap-up, and an additional project all on myself at the same time, because that's kind of what happened.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
I'll never do that again.
Well, I mean, the Q&A ended up being way more in-depth than we have ever had.
Because the Q&A covered 5 chapters.
And they were really weird. They are really different. There's a lot of things about them got to cover.
Yeah.
Sometimes we have chapters that it's just like we're stretching to try to figure anything out to talk about.
Yeah.
Not this time.
No.
No, we did an hour episode the last time for part one.
Yeah, that was 49, 50, no, wait, no. What? 46, 47, 48, and 49.
Right, right. Yeah.
Yeah.
So anyway, today we're doing, what was it again?
We're finishing up the Q&A for Jeremiah, chapters 50 and 51, which cover the oracle to the nations. And these two are particularly with regard to Babylon.
And magic.
And then finishing up with chapter 52, which is just a little epilogue.
Got it. All right. Sounds good. You ready to get into this?
Yes. Okie dokie.
Let's do it.
Okay. All right.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable, too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
All right. So here we are jumping into the end of Jeremiah.
Okay.
Right?
Yep.
We're going to start with Jeremiah chapter 50. And this is one of those chapters that's part of the series of oracles against foreign nations.
Right.
And that whole bit consists of chapters 46 through 51. But 50 and 51 are the nation in question is Babylon.
Got it.
So we decided to do those two together.
And that's what I mean, like all of Jeremiah was focused on Babylon. So,
right.
I mean, this is the big one, right?
You know? Yes.
So, yeah.
Now, I do want to point out that oracles against the nations is in notes abbreviated OAN.
Okay.
And I just thought I'd put that out there because isn't that one of Trump's fucking channels? OAN?
Is it a right-wing leaning channel?
Yeah.
I think that's
one of those Fox News offshoot bullshittery.
I've literally never watched it, so I don't even know for sure, but it sounds like that might be.
I just think it's funny because I'm pretty sure that one of those channels is called OAN.
Yeah, yeah.
But OAN also means oracles against the nations.
Maybe that's where it spawned from.
I have no idea.
You know? Who knows?
I don't know. I just thought it was interesting.
Right, right.
So, all right. So in this chapter, we talked about Babylon getting conquered and Israel and Judah getting restored.
Right.
Okay?
As you do.
As you do.
Always.
Right. Always. There's always that glimmer of hope. I'm going to step on you, but I'll leave one of your toes unbroken.
Right, right.
Right. So let's talk about the conquest of Babylon and the humiliation of her idols, okay?
Sure, yeah.
It is characteristic of Jeremiah that threatened calamity should come from the north. First, the Scythians and then the Babylonians. Whereas here, the Persians or the Medes are the likely culprits. So always there were people coming from the north.
Right,
okay? Yeah. The Medes, who formed the chief part of the army of Cyrus, lay to the north or northeast of Babylon.
Okay.
Okay. So that's when he's like, Babylon gonna get it. That's who he's talking about.
Got it.
The Medes and the Persians.
Okay.
Okay. Right. So.
And they did eventually get conquered by the Persians, I think, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like the Babylonians did?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
But their walls never fell, which is a big deal.
Right, right, yeah.
Because that was part of the whole prophecy.
Sure.
And so then apologists are like, yet.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it doesn't really matter to me whether or not the prophecy actually came true with regard to these battles or not, because so many different groups of people were falling and taking over. And I mean, just there was all kinds of shit happening back then.
Okay. But I do want to put it out. And I agree with you 100%. Also, because prophecy is bullshit.
Right.
Okay?
Yeah.
So I do agree with you 100%. But I do want to put out there also, spoiler alert.
Yeah.
Babylon is mentioned again and is prophesied against again in the book of Revelation.
Okay.
So Christians are like, no, they're still gonna get theirs. It's to come. Just keep watching. Keep watching. 2,000 years later, keep watching.
But it's funny to me though that wasn't 2,000 years later though for the Bible writings.
No. But it at the end of the book of Revelation, like that was a long time ago.
Right.
And
okay.
We're waiting, like the book of Revelation has these prophecies just like on hold.
Got it.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So does that make sense?
I think so. So I don't know the history of it, and I'm not sure that you researched this or not, probably.
No, other than that I, in the notes, every time it said, well, this prophecy from Jeremiah never came true, and then Christian apologists would come right in with their thing, yeah, but it didn't come true yet, because we see it come up again in the book of Revelation that Babylon is going to fall.
Okay.
And its walls will fall and it's going to get crushed totally, blah, 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 blah.
Well, I mean, there certainly isn't a Babylon now.
Right.
And whether its walls fell or not is kind of irrelevant in the grand scheme of prophecies, because prophecies are trash. Bullshit to begin with.
Yes.
So
I'm trying to put it out there because you said it's irrelevant. And yes, it is. I agree with you. But it also is a little bit relevant in that we're going to circle back around to this.
Got it.
Eventually.
Okay.
Okay. That's all I'm trying to put out.
All right.
Okay. Verse 2 of chapter 50 mm-hmm. of Jeremiah says, Babylon is taken. Bel is shamed. Merodach is broken in pieces. Her idols are humiliated. Her images are broken in pieces. Now, the Hebrew word used here is indelicate. Like, it's very rude. It actually translates to balls of excrement. Shit balls, if you will. It is applied...
Dingleberries, maybe?
Could be.
Sure.
It is applied to pagan idols in Leviticus, Deuteronomy, 1 Kings, and several other places, apparently.
Got it.
Yeah, so I'm just letting you know.
Okay? Right, yeah.
Now, Bel, where it says that Bel is shamed...
Yeah.
That in Hebrew meant Lord, okay? And that was the title, not name, of the storm god Enlil. And when Marduk became head of the Babylonian pantheon in the second millennium BCE, he received the designation of Bel also.
Okay.
Okay?
All right.
So
just like head dude.
Yeah.
Got it.
Head god.
Okay.
Okay?
Yeah.
Yeah. So then we talked about the restoration of Israel and Judah.
Mm-hmm.
And since the Judeans will by this time have humbly repented before God, the downfall of Babylon will give them the opportunity to return to the land where their ancestors once lived.
I see.
Okay.
And God knew that by then they'll have humbly repented.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
And there's never going to be a problem with them ever.
Ever again.
Ever worshiping another idol ever again.
Right. And the Asherah poles are all gone.
I call bullshit.
I do as well. Right. I do as well. When Cyrus of Persia conquered Babylon in 539 BCE, he promptly gave permission to the Jews to return. And that was mentioned in 2 Chronicles.
Yeah, I remember that, actually. Mm-hmm. They really liked Cyrus, so that was he was a cool dude for them.
Yeah, yeah. So just a reminder there of kind of putting this all back together.
Well, again. And just to put it in years, like it was, I think, 577 or whatever, 578 BCE. When Babylon conquered the Israelites. So that would put that about 40, 50 years later.
Right.
When the Persians came in and conquered them.
And that's where they get their 70 years somehow.
Sure, yeah, whatever.
Not sure how all that math works, but whatever.
I doubt it does, exactly.
Right.
It works close enough, maybe.
There have been people that have stretched it saying, well, you have to include this domination period where the skirmishes hadn't happened, but the visitations had, like...
Yeah, whatever. There was a whole period of time when Egypt was basically running them, and then Babylon came in and started running them. And yes, you could maybe start counting from whenever you want to make it 70 years. But no, when they fucking burnt the goddamn temple down, that's when we should start. And when the Babylonians fell, that's when we should end.
Sure.
And I bet that doesn't fucking add up.
Well, you can take into account that there were three different waves of Babylon taking people from Judah.
Right. But so, they never, like, fully conquered it. They just were like, no, we're asserting our power here.
But they did insert a puppet king
in
Zedekiah.
They did. Sure.
I mean, would that not count as, like, do you have to smash buildings to conquer?
I don't know.
And that's where into it. Like, what is the specific date? You know,
but they weren't in exile yet. So like,
but if you asked that first round of people that got kidnapped, I guarantee you they'd be like, yeah, we're starting it from this day.
All right. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Like, I guess.
I'm not trying to argue.
It was a very low amount of people is all I was saying.
Right.
Like, so, I mean, the vast majority of Israelites didn't get conquered until the 578, 577 timeframe.
They still thought of themselves as the city that they were.
Right.
So, I'll go with you there.
Right.
All right. So then we talked about fleeing from Babylon under attack.
Okay.
And verse 9 reads, "For behold, I will raise and cause to come up against Babylon an assembly of great nations from the north country." Okay. Now, the army of Cyrus was composed of Medes, Persians, Armenians, Caduceans, Sakai, etc. Although all these did not necessarily come from the north individually, even so, they were arranged under the Medes, who did come from the north with regard to Babylon.
Got it.
Okay, that's a lot of fucking nations. They were like, we're done with you.
Right, right.
Like, we want you to fall down.
Yeah.
So then we talk about the actual fall of Babylon being the vengeance of the Lord. Okay.
All right.
Now, Cyrus captured Babylon by diverting the Euphrates River into a trench. The Persians attacked Babylon so unexpectedly that when the outer areas of the city had already been taken, those in the center did not even realize that they were captured.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
They were still partying.
Yeah.
It has troubled some scholars that Jeremiah predicted the violent destruction of Babylon, whereas its defeat by Cyrus in 539 BCE took place without a battle and with no damage to the city. And that just harkens back to what we were saying.
Yeah.
Like, can you really call that a sack if
right.
not a building fell?
No.
So,
I mean, whatever. It is what it is.
Yeah. You know?
I mean, like I said, I don't feel like these things are. And moreover, I don't think that a lot of the stuff was written when they say it was, like, when we're supposed to believe
right.
it was written.
Right.
You know, like, so I don't know how I feel about all that.
It's really hard to assign a specific start and stop date to any skirmishes, battles, and wars.
Right. But specifically, like, so we went through all of, this is what bothered me with this last section of books, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or chapters, I mean, was that we went through the whole, all of Jeremiah,
mm-hmm.
and there was not really a real bad word said about Babylon the entire time. It was just about Israel and what they were doing wrong and mm-hmm. what was going to happen to them, right?
Mm-hmm.
That was all we ever heard. And then we get to these last books that are not written in the same vein, style, or anything.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're like, yeah, Babylon's going to fall. And I'm like, okay.
Fuck so up Babylon.
You already know that, and you're just sticking this in Jeremiah because it sounds good and it's a quote-unquote prophecy?
Right.
That's where I struggle with this whole, it just doesn't fit.
Right.
It doesn't fit.
I totally agree. So then we move on to God saying he will pardon and preserve Israel, because that's what always happens.
Right, of course.
So the northern kingdom of Israel had been conquered by Assyria,
yep.
and then Assyria by Babylon, so that the exiled people of Israel, as well as those of Judah, eventually came back together under Babylon's power.
Oh, okay.
Interesting, yeah, right? Like, yeah. I hadn't thought about it, but yeah, that totally makes sense.
Right, right.
So, per Jeremiah's prophecy, now Babylon will fall and Israel and Judah will then return to their land, a united and forgiven people.
Okay.
So.
All right.
Interesting. Yeah. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So then we get into Babylon's slaughter. Verse 21 says, go up against the land of Marathaim, against it and against the inhabitants of Pekod. Waste and utterly destroy them, says the Lord.
Mm, okay.
Yeah. Now, Marathaim and Pekod were real locations in Babylon. Ironically, those place names sounded like the Hebrew words for double rebellion or rebel of rebels and punishment or land of doom.
Okay.
So that's fun.
Right.
Okay. And then verse 27 says, slay all her bulls, let them go down to the slaughter.
Mm.
Okay. The bulls were once sacrificed to the idols of Babylon, and then they would be destroyed in the supposed impending slaughter to come upon Babylon.
Oh, okay. So, yeah.
That's interesting.
Right.
Okay. So then we talk about proud Babylon being repaid and Israel's strong redeemer. Then we go into the sword against Chaldea. The complete nature of Babylon's destruction from the north, and the counsel of the Lord against Babylon.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So that was all in chapter 50.
Got it.
Okay.
Yeah.
So now we move on to chapter 51, which is your favorite.
It is definitely my favorite. Yeah.
Because
magic and curses and whatever the fuck's going on there. Yeah.
So chapter 51 is about the Lord's judgment on Babylon. And this is the last chapter of the series of oracles against the nations.
Okay.
And here we go.
Okay. Yeah.
The prophecy of Jeremiah continues from the previous chapter. And we hear about a destroying wind against Babylon.
Right.
Verse 1 reads, behold, I will raise up against Babylon, against those who dwell in Leb Kamai, a destroying wind. Now, Leb Kamai which is literally the midst of those who rise up against me, means Chaldea.
Okay.
And it's cryptically written using that Atbash thing that I talked about before, the cipher,
okay,
where it's monoalphabetic substitution, where, you know, the first letter of the one is the last letter of the other.
Sure.
And that, you know, then the second one is the second to last letter.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And the use of the Atbash was to disguise the identity of the adversary who would, in the context of the exile, particularly in the early period of the exile, seem to make historical sense. Like, this would make sense that they would do this when they were talking about it. But no one would, but one would wonder why a writer would introduce the device at this point when Babylon had been referred to already.
Right.
Which kind of, you know, goes to when was all this shit written?
Doesn't that lend to them being in exile with Babylon? Because if they're writing it in a cipher, right, they're maybe disguising it because they are already in captivity of Babylon.
That's what I'm saying, though. It makes the order that these, all of these chapters were written in and the time period and who wrote it, it makes that all questionable.
Right.
Even more so than it already was.
Sure.
Because if they're using that system, they're using it for a reason.
Yeah.
And they're trying to keep it in code that they're talking about Babylon fucking sucks.
Right. And moreover, if we say that this was written during the Babylonian exile, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's no evidence that we have. In fact, there's strong evidence against it that Jeremiah made it to that point.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, he probably died prior to that and or ran away somewhere.
Exactly.
So there's not a lot of evidence of him being in the exile.
Exactly.
So,
yeah, there's a lot of evidence, like you said, that points to the fact that he probably died out there in the desert.
Right. So if in fact this was written during the exile or after the exile, whichever, obviously it probably was not written by Jeremiah.
Exactly.
Which, you know, goes along with a lot of what I've been thinking, too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Makes a lot of sense.
Right.
So then we move on to fleeing from a fallen Babylon. And verse 8 says, Babylon has suddenly fallen and been destroyed. Wail for her. Take balm for her pain. Perhaps she may be healed.
Mm.
Okay, so in this, quote unquote, Jeremiah, because we've just decided that Jeremiah didn't write this.
Yeah, right.
But Jeremiah was sarcastically mocking Babylon here. The nations would obviously not wail over the empire that had made them suffer.
Right.
And would have no interest in a balm for its pain or healing.
Right.
So we wondered, like, what the fuck that meant. It was sarcasm.
Sure.
And they didn't have the slash S to denote the tone that we all know and use liberally in our texts now, because we understand that you cannot always catch tone and meaning in the written word.
Yeah.
So then we move on to the vengeance of God against Babylon.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And verse 11 reads, make the arrows bright, gather the shields. The Lord has raised up the spirit of the kings of the Medes. And here, Jeremiah is envisioning the coming battle against Babylon through the kings of the Medes, okay? So this was like a vision where he's like, this is what's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And the Medes lived in northwest Iran in the general region of the modern Iranian Kurdistan, okay?
Yeah.
They were allied with Babylon in the destruction of Nineveh in 612 BCE, but later they joined the Persians to defeat Babylon in 539 BCE.
Right. But if that didn't happen, so like the Bible is trying to say Jeremiah prophesies this, right? That these people were going to do this thing and join with these other people to defeat Babylon, right?
Right.
That's not what happened. Like, this is totally written
after
closer. This is closer to the end of Babylon or after the end of Babylon. One of the two.
Yeah.
There's no way. Like, I mean, okay, look. Let's just agree on one thing. I know you'll agree with me on this. Prophecy did not happen in the Bible.
Of course. Prophecy did not happen anywhere ever.
And specifically, when they get very specific about the fucking enemies,
mm-hmm.
you know that it was written either during or after the fact.
Yeah.
Like, there's no way that this wasn't written at that point.
Right.
So this is definitely written much later than the rest of Jeremiah.
Yes.
So, okay, I'm sorry. I'm just harping on that because
It matters.
It really, really fucking matters. Mm-hmm. And it matters for the context of a lot of the things that are in this chapter, too.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Mm-hmm. So the Medes and the Persians are linked together. For example, the mother of Cyrus the Persian was a Mede.
Got it.
So they are intertwined at this point.
Sure.
Okay. So then we talk about the power of Yahweh, and it gets contrasted with empty idols. And then we read about bringing many kingdoms against Babylon. Okay. Mm-hmm. And verse 27 says, set up a banner in the land, blow the trumpet among the nations, prepare the nations against her, call the kingdoms together against her. Ararat, Mini, Ashkenaz, appoint a general against her, cause the horses to come up like the bristling locusts.
Okay.
Okay. Mm-hmm. This was a call to sanctify and call together the various nations to wage their sacred war against Babylon.
Got it.
Yeah. The three specified kingdoms were in the area of present-day Armenia and were part of the Empire of the Medes, which spread in a great arc to the north of Babylon's dominions.
Okay.
Okay.
Yep.
Verse 32 reads, the passages are blocked, the reeds they have burned with fire, and the men of war are terrified. So the reedy swamps or marshes were a result of the Euphrates overflowing. Because remember, they had blocked it.
Oh, okay? right. Yeah.
And so then they set all that shit on fire.
Okay.
And that's kind of how they were able to say that it's burning.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, that wasn't prophesized. Y'all saw that or heard the story about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So one thing that's interesting to note here is that this prophecy might have allowed the Babylonians to be forewarned and thus forearmed against Cyrus's stratagem, right? You would think they'd be like, maybe we should check this out and not leave so many reeds lying around to be burnt, right?
Right.
But they appear to have dismissed it and taken no preemptive action because it didn't happen like that.
Right.
That right there is, to me, the ultimate proof.
Yeah, right? among many other things.
But right. I mean, like but the practicality of it is that if this had been put out there, that this was a way that your city can be overtaken, and you hear about that shit, you are going to take some precautions like, oh, well, maybe y'all ain't going to do it, but somebody might try it. Now that they've read how to do it, I'm not going to leave reeds lying around to get burned so y'all can have a fire circle around my fucking city.
Sure. But even before we get to the fact that they're knowing things that they definitely didn't know without seeing it or knowing it, you know, because they were there.
Right.
Without even that, I mean, just when we were reading the chapter without doing any of the studying, the style of this chapter alone was enough for me to say, no, this was not.
No, this is
not Jeremiah.
This is somebody emulating a Deuteronomist style writing and then claiming to be Jeremiah, and then at the end said, these were totally what Jeremiah told me to write. And
keep in mind, too, that that's not an uncommon thing in the Bible or in those times.
Yeah, I was going to say in literature of that time at all.
A lot of people would take the name of somebody more famous to get their writings pushed out there.
Yeah.
And it was kind of almost an accepted practice from what I've gathered.
So. Yeah, well, and also it was a sign of respect that this person was he was an accepted source of information. And so you weren't usurping his name. You were helping to add to the story that he was already telling.
Right.
So it wasn't necessarily a bad thing that this guy did this, whoever this guy is.
But it can.
No, the bad thing is that apologists today know that that was a common practice and they're ignoring that fact and saying, no, it says Jeremiah. He totally wrote it. And it's like, I'm a dumb ass in my fucking living room. And I know that that is not true.
Right.
So I know that you, sir, also know that that's not true.
Right.
So that's all.
Yep.
All right. So then we move on to the threshing of Babylon as they had threshed Zion.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yep.
And Babylon was like lambs to the slaughter.
Right.
Okay. And verse 39 says, in their excitement, I will prepare their feasts. I will make them drunk that they may rejoice and sleep a perpetual sleep and not awake, says the Lord.
Okay.
So due to the great size of the city, the outskirts were captured without the people in the center knowing anything about it, which we already said.
Right.
There was a drunken festival going on, and they continued to dance and enjoy themselves until they learned the news the hard way, and many revelers retired to rest and never awoke because they were slain in their beds, which is what that sleep of perpetual sleep meant. So they went out partying, dancing, ate, drank, enjoyed the pretzel festival.
So this is very detailed as to like the actual occurrences that, that maybe did happen as, as far as what we know.
And that's what makes it interesting.
So that definitely lends more and more and more
to the
the Babylonian exile.
Yeah,
interesting. Exactly. Interesting. Yeah.
I just, wow, that kind of chilled me.
Like, yeah.
You go to a party, you come home and go to sleep and you're like drunk and hungover, but that's okay. You never wake up.
Right. Yeah,
that sucks. Yeah. I mean, at least you died happy,
I get, sure.
If you never knew it was coming and you died in your sleep.
Right.
The last thing you knew was a drunken party.
Sure. Yeah.
All right. So, moving on, the next thing we get is to punishing Babylon and her idols. And verse 41 says, oh, how Shishak is taken. And I forgot we had read about this before. Shishak is Babylon. And that's, again, using that Atbash cipher code thing.
Okay.
And the defenses of Babylon were compromised when she was conquered by the Medes and the Persians. So in a symbolic sense, apologists say the wall of Babylon did fall. But that's like a...
Yeah.
Sure. But it didn't, though.
Right. Okay. Well, that's kind of what I was getting at. If you wanted to look at it with... symbolism, like you could take it as meaning this.
But so. Physically, to be clear, the walls never actually fell.
Right, no, I got you. I got you. Yeah.
So, moving on. Babylon that plundered the Lord's house will now be plundered itself. Ooh.
You mean the plundering that they did at the behest of God?
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I just...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally.
Yep.
So, verse 53 reads... Though Babylon were to mount up to heaven, and though she were to fortify the height of her strength, yet from me plunderers would come to her, says the Lord. Mm-hmm. And this is an allusion to the Tower of Babel, where it says it was mounted up to heaven.
Yeah, right.
Okay.
Right.
Which was constructed as a defense and in defiance against God back in Genesis.
Okay. Yeah.
So they're saying that Babylon is just like the Tower of Babel.
Got it.
Which is, you know, ha 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 ha.
Right.
I see what you did there.
Yeah.
Ha 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 ha.
Yeah.
So then we talk about Babylon's broken walls, which were never broken.
Sure.
More. Okay. Then we get to the postscript of this chapter.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So we're still in chapter 51.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
And we talk about Zedekiah's visit to Babylon. And I have a little bit of notes here. Okay. Is
it Zedekiah or
Zedekiah.
Okay, okay.
Okay. Because right. Jeremiah sent Zedekiah to say all this shit.
I thought it was Sariah.
Oh, you know what? I'm so sorry. Zedekiah is the king guy, the puppet king. Yeah. Right. No, this is Zedekiah's visit to Babylon.
Okay.
And Jeremiah sent Sariah with Zedekiah.
Okay, okay.
Sorry.
Okay. Sorry.
Sorry, I got confused there.
No, you're fine.
So Jeremiah sent Sariah with Zedekiah to Babylon.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
So this was not a year when Babylon came against Judah, but instead an earlier time when Zedekiah and neighboring kings had plotted a rebellion against Babylon while she seemed weakened.
Okay.
Okay. This journey of Zedekiah to Babylon is not recorded anywhere else and was likely an attempt to make things right with Nebuchadnezzar after the aborted plot in which Zedekiah seems to have been implicated. So the king's like, I'm your puppet. I didn't do anything. Why are you mad at me, Nebuchadnezzar?
Right, right.
So Nebuchadnezzar's quote-unquote intelligence, his little FBI agents, got wind of impending plans. And I'm thinking like, probably from fucking Jeremiah, who was playing double agent, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And thus some explanation was needed.
Sure.
He's like, Lucy, I need an explanation.
Right.
And then... Nebuchadnezzar's like, so come tell me.
Yeah.
And then Zedekiah's like, I don't know. So Zedekiah's summons to Babylon was undoubtedly to assess dude's loyalty.
Got it.
Okay. Likely because of reports that envoys of five neighboring states had been conferring with him at Jerusalem. So Nebuchadnezzar in Babylon is like my guy, my puppet king, sweet love child Zedekiah. I heard that five different kings were visiting you. Would you like to come up here to Babylon and explain yourself, sir?
Well, and I have to point something out here, too. It's not explicitly said, but like, The fact that Jeremiah, you kind of alluded to it, but the fact that Jeremiah is being sent, or I'm sorry, the fact that Jeremiah is sending Sariah and Zedekiah down with to Zedekiah. Nebuchadnezzar, mm-hmm. kind of lends to the fact that he might work for the Babylonians. Mm-hmm. So, yes. Like, you know,
further evidence.
And you did say that already, but I just mm-hmm. wanted to like reiterate that because
yeah.
it almost seems like he was the one in charge of handling some of this.
I wonder what the summons said, because do you think Nebuchadnezzar would be like, get your ass up here, sir, because I heard that five kingdoms visited you? Or do you think that his letter would be like, dear puppet king Zedekiah, I have a very important thing to discuss with you. Please get your ass up here. You know what you did.
Or, you know, the better way to do it would be to tell Jeremiah, like Nebuchadnezzar could send something to Jeremiah and say, hey, could you figure out a way to get Zedekiah to come see me?
Big Z.
And then Jeremiah like talks to him and says, hey, maybe you should go do this to smooth things over. And, you know,
yeah.
And then I'm going to send Sariah with you because I need him to do something too.
Exactly.
And then maybe you guys can fix all this, you know.
Like, exactly.
Again, could fall in line with his double agent bullshit.
Either way.
Right. Yeah.
Like, Jeremiah knew.
I will never not believe that.
Yeah. He was a total double agent.
Yeah.
At him and his boys, squad.
Oh, yeah.
So Jeremiah sent a copy of all of these prophecies. So these last two chapters.
Yeah.
Okay. So 50 and 51.
Right.
He sent all of those prophecies against Babylon with Sariah, who was a Judean quartermaster taken to Babylon in exile with Zedekiah, king of Judah.
Okay.
And he sent those to be read to the exiles in Babylon. So he didn't send them to be read to the Babylonians.
Right.
He sent the prophecies to be read in front of the exiles up there.
Right, the Israelites.
Yeah, to tell them, you know, Babylon's going to fall, be ready to run.
Sure.
Which is interesting to me.
Right.
It's like he's, again, a double agent. He's playing fucking both sides.
But this would have been back in like the almost 580s or something like that. I can't remember mm-hmm. exactly when they sent.
Earlier.
Yeah, earlier. So right. like this would have been earlier on before they even sacked Jerusalem.
Exactly.
And so, yeah, this is weird.
So weird.
Like he's sending stuff that we know for a fact was not written by Jeremiah. You know what I mean? Like this whole thing is just so weird and not correct.
None of it goes together. Yeah. And I'm like, maybe you sent something, but it wasn't this because you were telling them, okay, when you get my signal, exiles up there, get ready to run.
Right.
And then, like, the signal never came, so they never got ready to run.
I feel like Jeremiah became a legend, and then to solidify that legend, they started creating some other stories after the fact.
Yes.
Right? Like, that's maybe what happened.
Yeah, I totally agree with you.
Right.
So, we have to ask, though, I'm sorry, Sariah was what? A quartermaster. What the fuck is that?
Oh, I know what a quartermaster is.
What is a quartermaster?
It's somebody who manages all the supplies and stuff. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Very good.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I knew that, but...
Sure.
I know what it is logistically, speaking, but let's talk about it in the terms of what they meant by it.
Okay.
Okay? As quartermaster, he was the staff officer responsible for looking after the comfort of the king of Judah whenever he stopped for the night.
Okay.
So not necessarily.
Literally, he was in charge of his quarters.
Yes. So not necessarily like general supplies, but like, no. Just supplies for the king, y'all.
Sure.
I'm here to make sure his chamber pot is pretty, not yours.
Got it. Yeah.
So Jeremiah gave a copy of the prophecy to Sariah because he did not go to Babylon himself. And then Jeremiah ended his days in Egypt. Womp, womp.
Or maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wherever he went.
Right.
We've talked about that before.
Yeah.
Yeah. So then there's a graphic illustration of Babylon's coming judgment. And that is the end of that chapter. Okay.
Wait.
What?
I thought that was the chapter with the magic.
Well, the whole chapter was magic. That was chapter 51. The whole thing was this big chanty magic spell.
Right.
But I was just reading you the points in it of what happened. So let's talk about magic.
Okay.
Let's talk about that for a minute.
All right.
Okay. Let me scroll down here. Okay. So magic. And that's what that whole chapter, like the way that we just went through it, it's like, yeah, that was total Bible stuff, blah, 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 verses, nonsense, things, history.
Right.
But as we were actually reading the verses, the way it read was as a chant or as something like a scene from Beowulf or as like a curse.
Right.
And that's what you are talking about.
Well, and specifically it was verses 60 through 64 that I was, that caught my attention.
Yes.
So, cause that's the ones where they literally tell him to do this thing and then to tie it to a rock and throw it into the Euphrates.
Yeah. So he tells Saraya, when you get there, read all this shit out loud.
Yeah.
And then wrap it around a rock, bind it that way, and throw that whole thing into the Euphrates River. And then apologists come along later and be like, that was totally to show what's going to happen to Babylon. And I'm like, that would totally make sense, except that we just now clarified that he wasn't reading that to the Babylonian leaders.
Right, right.
He was reading that to the Jewish exiles.
Yeah.
So why would he be symbolizing to the exiles? Like, no, that's stupid.
Right.
That's not what happened. Stop.
Yeah. He's not sending the message to Nebuchadnezzar.
Right.
He's doing a fucking curse.
Yes.
Amongst his people.
Yes. So let's talk about that, right?
Yeah.
So defensive or legitimate magic in Mesopotamia, which was like that whole swath of area land stuff, okay? Yeah,
right.
It's kind of like the generic term that we use. Like today we would say, you know, the Middle East. And we mean like this whole big swath of land that none of us really knows all the countries that are quote unquote in the Middle East. We don't really know like how far it butts up against China or goes down into India. Like we don't know any of that stuff, right? We just say Middle East.
Sure.
And we're just, I'm not talking about like no, you I know. Read the news and know maps.
Right.
I'm talking about like normal people.
Yeah.
That don't have a fucking clue.
Right. It's just like how we refer to that area.
That over there. Whole area over there is the Middle East. It used to be called Mesopotamia.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
So defensive magic in Mesopotamia were incantations and ritual practices intended to alter specific realities.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah. So yeah, that tracks. That tracks. Mm-hmm. Okay. The ancient Mesopotamians believed that magic was the only viable defense against demons, ghosts, and evil sorcerers. So I'm not saying that they thought that it was demons, ghosts, and evil sorcerers, but they did think that Babylon was bad.
Right. Well, and I kind of commented on this before, and it's something that's been in my mind, is that they weren't necessarily doing the exact same thing that the Babylonians were doing with regard to their magic and curses and things like that. But they did, at this point, you know, based on what we think about what's going on in this chapter, they had been living amongst the Babylonians and probably picked up some of their practices, or at least were around them enough to absorb some of it.
Sure.
You know? So
sure. Like, oh, this spell seems to work. Let's use this spell, but replace our God's name so that we're doing it to our God, not their God.
Sure, sure.
So yeah, totally.
Yeah.
The ancient Mesopotamians also used magic intending to protect themselves from evil sorcerers who might place curses on them.
Mm.
And this kind of sounded like, chapter 51 sounded like both a curse against Babylon,
yeah,
a manifestation of this is what we want to happen to Babylon, but also a protection spell of, and we want them gone because we want to be free.
Sure.
So it's kind of like all of those things together.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Now, curses were typically enacted in secret, whereas a defense spell against sorcery was conducted in the open in front of an audience, if possible.
Hmm.
Right. Which is very interesting, because he specifically told him, go up there and read this to those fucking exiles.
Yeah.
Read it out loud.
Right.
Before you, you know, do these other wrap it up and toss it things.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So the concept of magic was intimately linked with the spoken and written word, which Wiccans would probably tell you it still is today. I don't know.
Sure.
The act of speaking a ritual formula was an act of creation. There is a sense in which action and speech were one and the same thing. So by speaking these things, they are bringing it into
existence,
being. Or, yes, yeah, right. Existence. Sure. Yes. The magical powers of words extended, of course, to the written word.
Got it.
Okay.
Yeah.
So everything that they were saying, the writing it down was what allowed it to travel, and then the speaking it was the bringing it into existence.
Well, and there
that's why they needed both.
With regard specifically to chapter 51, at the very least, mm-hmm. There was a certain cadence to the words at some level, too. Mm-hmm. It wasn't just like a normal chapter.
Right,
exactly. It was very repetitive, and it was very almost poetic.
Yes.
I mean, you know, again, there's translations
stretching
and what
it,
have you,
sure,
but,
sure.
You know, it definitely had a cadence.
Sure.
So.
Yeah. No, I totally agree. It could definitely be a chant if tweaked.
Right.
And may have been a chant as originally written in the Hebrew or Greek or whatever. I don't know.
Sure.
So yeah. that would be something interesting if I knew those languages.
Right.
Now, most magical rituals were intended to be performed by an expert in the magical arts. The profession was generally passed down from generation to generation and was held in extremely high regard. They often served as advisors to kings and great leaders.
Okay.
Which is interesting. They also likely served not only as a magician, but also as a physician, a priest, a scribe, and a scholar.
Which I found interesting
because later on, you know, we learn that Baruch is his personal little scribe.
For Jeremiah, you mean?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah.
So, and Baruch and Sariah were relatives. So,
Got it.
You know, whatever was passed down in the family.
Right. It might have related to both of them,
mm-hmm.
sort of.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So, I'm just throwing it
Which
out there.
Which would also fall in line with the whole double agent thing. Because mm-hmm. if that's something that was in that family and they were friends with Jeremiah, that tracks that they learned this skill from, obviously, some other culture,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And so, whatever. There's too many things that fall in line here for me.
I'm just,
there's something fucked up with all this shit.
I'm just throwing this out there as food for thought.
Yeah.
I could go either way. It doesn't really fucking matter.
This is like the closest we've come to a conspiracy theory in the Bible.
I know.
I'm loving it.
It's fun.
Sure. Yeah.
Okay? I'm going to read.
Okay.
Jewish religious law forbade divination and other forms of soothsaying, which is, you know, telling the future.
Well, yeah. Okay? I mean, you're supposed to stone people to death if they do do it wrong. So,
yeah. Except for, you know, the Witch of Endor.
Yeah, but that witch was kind of secret.
Yeah.
Because remember, the king dressed up mm-hmm. and like went and secretly visited the Witch of Endor. So
he's like, I won't stone you this time.
Right, right.
Yeah. So practical Kabbalah in historical Judaism is a branch of the Jewish mystical tradition that concerns the use of magic. It was considered permitted white magic by its practitioners, reserved for the elite who could separate its spiritual source from realms of evil if performed under circumstances that were holy and pure.
See.
Meaning, if they decided that it was good, then it was good.
Right, right. Yeah.
So,
how convenient.
Right, yeah. Just depends on who you were friends with in the office.
Yeah, yeah.
These magical practices of Judaic folk religion became part of practical Kabbalah, and they date from Talmudic times.
Okay.
Which is, you know, kind of what we're talking about, right?
Right.
The Talmud mentions the use of charms for healing and a wide range of magical cures that were sanctioned by rabbis.
Hmm.
So they did allow magic. They just didn't call it magic.
Right, yeah.
Although magic was forbidden by Levitical law in the Hebrew Bible, it was widely practiced in the late Second Temple period, and particularly well documented in the period following the destruction of the temple and on into the 3rd, 4th, and 5th centuries current era.
Which is where, like, the destruction of the temple is where we're at, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So. Yep. Sure is.
Okay.
Ancient examples of magic can be loosely grouped into two categories.
Yeah.
And this kind of gets a little out there for a minute, but I promise to bring it back, okay? We've got black magic, largely associated with inflicting harm, and white magic, associated with providing benefits or forms of protection. Now, curse tablets definitely fall into the former category, the black magic.
Yeah.
Okay. These tablets were normally thin pieces of lead inscribed with a curse against an enemy, which could then be folded and often sealed and pierced with a nail. The curses were then buried, commonly in bodies of water or wells, and also in graves.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Uh-huh.
The language, I'm sorry, did you say bodies of water?
Yeah, I think you did.
Yeah,
I think you
yeah. did. And, yeah. And just to be clear, he had to wrap it around a rock and throw it into the Euphrates, right?
Right. Yeah.
Okay, just checking. Mm-hmm. Just checking.
Sure.
Okay. The language of those texts that do give context is often concerned with justice, listing the target's crimes in great detail,
okay.
and handing over responsibility for their punishments to the gods,
huh.
often using indefinite grammar, meaning present tense and mixed with, it might go back and forth, like
yeah.
you can't really... It doesn't have to follow normal grammar laws.
Got it.
So
got it.
I'm just saying.
Which kind of all falls in line with what we read. In yeah.
Okay. It was a spell.
It was a spell.
It was magic.
We're absolutely right on this.
You were 100%
right. I will never be convinced otherwise.
Two things about the book of Jeremiah. He was a double agent.
Right.
And yeah. chapter 51 was a goddamn magic spell.
Yeah.
And actually a third thing, he didn't write the majority of this shit because it was written after he died.
Or Baruch wrote it.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah. Okay. So anyway, Jewish magical papyri. So uh-huh. papyruses, right?
Yeah.
They're a subclass of papyri with specific Jewish magical uses, which shed light on popular belief during the late Second Temple period and after into late antiquity.
Okay.
Although magic was forbidden by Levitical law in the Hebrew Bible, it was widely practiced in the Second Late Temple period. And I just said all that particularly yeah, yeah. well documented, blah, 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 blah. And Jewish and Samaritan magicians even appear in the New Testament.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
So that is my spiel on magic
yeah.
from chapter 51.
No, I very much appreciate all of that because, mm-hmm. I mean, mm-hmm. this has been one of those just things that pop up in the Bible that I have been dying to, like, get to, like, to figure out more mm-hmm. about it. And we didn't initially find out a lot of information.
Well,
but like everything you've come up with, and I really, really appreciate the research you did.
Is
fantastic.
Let me tell you why this took me so long. Because you can't just type in, hey, was Jeremiah chapter 51 a fucking magic spell? Like, you don't think I didn't try that, actually,
right,
okay?
Right, yeah.
Just in case, like, somebody in Reddit or something
yeah.
wrote, like, a little, like, Quora mm-hmm. thing on it. Like, yeah, sure, and here's some sources, right?
Right, yeah.
Like, you always ask the dumb question first, just in case somebody else has a resource or an opinion about it.
Sure.
Okay, I'm not opposed to following all the rabbit holes.
Right,
okay?
Yeah.
So... you can't just type that. So then the question is, well, what the fuck do you do? What do you ask? And so I had to start with like a very basic, like magic during that time period.
Yeah.
Okay. Magic to the Egyptians in that time period. Magic to the Jewish in that time period. Magic to, was there magic in Babylonia? And like, so I had to go through like all these different areas. And for every hour that I would read stuff, I would maybe take like two bits of information.
Well, and when you're looking up stuff, you oftentimes find the apologist stuff first.
Yes.
Right? Because there's so much of it out there.
Yes.
And the majority of the information that's out there is based on thinking, is saying that Jeremiah wrote this shit.
Mm-hmm.
It was pre-Babylonian exile.
Mm-hmm.
And that it was a prophecy. Right. And
yes.
this is not magic. It was just them, you know, whatever.
It something. Doesn't even say that it's not magic because why would they say it's not magic? Nobody ever said it was.
Right. Right.
So.
Yeah. The misinformation on this, the mind fuck on this is extensive.
Yeah. So I had to kind of find back ways to come at the information to say, OK, I'm not saying that this was a magic spell, but was magic, what did magic look like back then? Were people doing magic? And the answer is the magic that they did back then, yes, they did. And the second thing is, and it looked like this.
Right.
Okay.
Right, yeah.
So.
No, and that's the amazing thing that I very much appreciate. The stuff you found is, it confirms to me mm-hmm. a lot of the things that I was thinking.
Yeah, me
and
too.
And that the fact that I thought it and then we've now been able to somewhat confirm it
mm-hmm.
is very satisfying.
Now we can sleep at night. So my next question is, Are we ready to get into chapter 52?
Yeah, let's go ahead and do it.
Okay.
Like, might as well, let's wrap up. Let's get this Q&A done.
I mean,
this is a long episode, but let's get it done.
Let's get it done, and then we'll be done with Jeremiah, except for all of the, wrap-up.
Except for all the stuff we're not done with yet.
Yeah, exactly. All right, so this chapter was added after Jeremiah's time.
Chapter 52.
Right. Probably by Ezra, whom we've already read.
Yeah.
After the return from the captivity. So I don't know if you recall that Ezra and Nehemiah, they were buddies and pals.
Yeah.
So this would have been by them.
Okay.
Yeah. So I don't know why the fuck we're reading about people that came before them.
Right.
Like, why couldn't they just staple it together the other way?
Yeah.
In the order that these guys appear. Would that not make better sense?
It would.
Okay. Because that really, like, threw me for a loop. Like, I could not understand it. I was like, wait, Ezra, we already read those guys. Hold on. What do you mean Ezra probably wrote? Wait, Ezra came after this guy?
Well, you and I talked about this tonight, actually.
Yes.
And I think that at some point we're going to try to, we keep coming up with these projects that we're never going to do, but we're going to do this one at some point. But like, we need a chronological atheist reference Bible. And like, I feel like that would be perfect. Not necessarily atheist, but just like study, like,
just
something
in order, a chronological,
right.
Like combining the books of Kings and Chronicles and all these fucking prophets, you know, get rid of the Psalms and the fucking poesy nonsense, right?
Sure.
Get rid of Job. I don't know. He doesn't really fit in. You can just write his name on the timeline,
Job.
I guess.
Yeah, right.
You know, whatever. But I need this reorganized in such a way that it fucking makes sense, because I cannot hold all of this extraneous data. It's just like various darts on a dartboard.
Really, a flowchart would be fantastic. Even,
yeah.
You know, just,
and
like,
I'm sure somebody has already done that.
Right.
But I would like to do it because it would help me.
But understand. I feel like the flowchart would still have to be a book because it would be so long.
Right.
You'd have to keep continuing the flowchart.
Yeah. You'd have to just keep turning the pages to get the next century or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, so we are going to move on to then chapter 52, okay?
All right.
And we start with the failure of kings, the evil reign and rebellion of Zedekiah.
Okay.
And we forgot, like, I think for a while that, he was just a puppet king, you guys.
Yeah.
He was a young man. He was not in the best position.
Like, right. I mean, I kind of feel sorry for him.
Like, I do.
What are you supposed to do, you know?
Yeah.
So.
And he's, like, described as a weak, wishy-washy king. And I'm like, was he weak and wishy-washy, or was he powerless and did the best he could?
Right. How could you be anything else when you have somebody else controlling you, but you're doing things against the wishes of your own people?
Right. Like, you're trying to take care of your people, but you also have to answer to, you know, fart face up there.
Yeah.
You know?
Right. Yeah.
So, I don't know. I think I have a little bit more sympathy for Zedekiah than the rest of the
apologists. Sure, I mean, that couldn't have been a good position to be in.
I wouldn't want it.
No.
So Zedekiah was only 21 when Nebuchadnezzar set him on the throne of Judah as a puppet king after the rebellion of Joachim in 2 Kings.
Okay.
And see, that sentence right there, I was like, hold on. I kind of remember that. Why the fuck am I, what, okay. Like, I need a better way.
Yeah.
Okay, he reigned as king of Judah from 597 to 587 BCE.
Okay,
so about 10 years.
Sure.
Okay.
Right.
Zedekiah was a weak king whose reign was characterized throughout by religious failure and political indecision.
Mm-hmm.
I hate that characterization of him.
Right.
Finally, after years of uncertain plotting, he decided to rebel openly against his overlord, Babylon.
Right.
And I'm like,
I mean, I'm sure, look, he's the king who was put in place by Nebuchadnezzar, right?
Yeah.
And he knows what kind of power they have.
Mm-hmm. He has seen it firsthand.
And what they could do to them.
Yeah.
You know? So, like, deciding to go up against that guy is not going to be an easy decision. And,
right?
You know, moreover, he, if I had to guess why he would have even attempted to do something, it's because peer pressure and just finally was like, fuck it. You guys want to do this? Let's do it.
Yeah.
You know, like, whatever. I don't care anymore.
Right? Like, what do I have? Only my sons and my eyeballs to lose. So verse 4 reads, "Now it came to pass in the 9th year of his reign, in the 10th month, on the 10th day of the month, that Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, and all his army came against Jerusalem and encamped against it, and they built a siege wall against it all around. Okay, and this date is reckoned to be January 15th-ish, 588 BCE.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
So just putting that out there. Okay. Verse 6 says, by the fourth month, on the ninth day of the month, the famine had become so severe in the city that there was no food for the people of the land.
And I remember we were talking about this. The exact dates are killing me here.
On this day, this is when they decided they were so fucking hungry. The day before, they were only pretty hungry.
Yeah.
This date is reckoned to be about July 18th,
okay,
586 BCE. So the siege against Jerusalem had lasted almost a full 18 months.
Wow.
Yeah. So they starved them out for a year and a half.
That's rough.
Yeah. So then we move into Zedekiah's failed escape, his capture and execution. Okay.
Well, he wasn't really executed. He was.
Well, no.
There was execution of some people, but not him.
Yeah. So,
okay.
Verse 8 reads, but the army of the Chaldeans pursued the king, and they overtook Zedekiah in the plains of Jericho. And we've talked about this before, how he was like so close to making it, and he was almost there if he had just been able to cross into Egypt, but he couldn't.
Right.
So then what stuck out was, wait, the plains of Jericho.
Right.
Like, okay, so there's a little bit of irony here because Jericho is the very spot where Israel first set foot on the promised land.
Oh.
Yeah. And this is also where the last of the Davidic kings was captured and his monarchy shattered.
Oh, okay.
That's interesting, right?
Yeah.
There's some poesy there, if you will.
Really, yeah.
Here, where Israel experienced her first victory as the walls of Jericho fell before unarmed men who trusted God, was the scene of her last defeat.
Mm.
Womp womp.
Yeah.
So then we get into the destruction of the temple.
Okay.
That's fun.
Yeah.
So verse 12 says, now in the fifth month, on the 10th day of the month, which was the 19th year of King Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, Nebuzaradan, the captain of the guard who served the king of Babylon, came to Jerusalem. He burned the house of the Lord and the king's house, all the houses of Jerusalem, that is, all the houses of the great, he burned with fire. And all the army of the Chaldeans who were with the captain of the guard broke down all the walls of Jerusalem all around.
Yeah.
Okay. So let's talk about all that a little bit. That was three verses I just read.
Sure.
Okay. So the Talmud declares that when the Babylonians entered the temple, they held a 2-day feast there to desecrate it. And then on the third day, they set fire to the building, which burned throughout that day and the next.
Got it.
The calamity surrounding the fall of Jerusalem and the burning of Solomon's temple is commemorated in modern Judaism by the annual fast day, Tisha B'Av.
Okay.
Yeah. This holiday is, or holiday, it's not a holiday, it's an observation.
Right.
Is an annual fast day in Judaism on which a number of disasters in Jewish history occurred. Primarily the destruction of both Solomon's temple by the Neo-Babylonian Empire and the second temple by the Roman Empire in Jerusalem later on.
Okay.
So that's a sad day.
Right.
It is believed to be a day which is destined for tragedy and thus is regarded as the saddest day in the Jewish calendar.
I can see why. Which day was it again?
I'm about to get there. It's called Tisha B'Av.
Right. Okay? Right.
It falls in July or August, so it's coming up.
Okay.
Last year it fell in July, but this year it will be observed beginning at sunset 12 August through nightfall 13 August.
Got it.
So, you know, just little patience and sympathy for your Jewish friends that day who are observing this.
Yeah.
A note about Nebuzaradan, the captain of the guard. That title in Hebrew is literally the chief executioner or the slaughterer. And remember how, like, at first we were like, oh, he's a pretty good guy because he took Jeremiah under his wing and he was going to take care of him and stuff. Well, and then we were like, holy shitballs, he's killing everybody.
Right.
And we were like, I guess he's not so nice after all.
Right.
Yeah, he's the chief executioner. He's the slaughterer. He's not nice.
Got it.
He's not a good guy.
Okay.
Methodically, he set about to demolish the beautiful city, burning the palace and the chief buildings, breaking down the walls, and wrecking the temple. So,
but again, this leads me to believe that Jeremiah was a double agent.
Mm-hmm.
Because why the fuck would why he get to
would,
leave?
Why would Nebuzaradan be like, I hate you, die. I hate you, die. Oh, hey, Jeremiah, sup?
Right.
You want to come with us or you going to stay? Either way is cool.
Yeah.
Cool. Right. Okay. All right. I'll check you later. Be like, yeah, that's totally how that conversation went.
Yeah.
Okay. So then we get into the deportation of the people.
Okay.
Babylon took most of the people into captivity, leaving behind only those that were of no use to them.
Wow.
Okay. Yeah. No use. And then came the deportation of temple vessels. So they also stripped the temple of its valuable metals, taking its furnishings, decorations, vessels, and utensils to Babylon. Remember, they were naming like plates and cups and spoons and forks.
Yeah, yeah.
Things too large to carry whole were broken up so that they could be carried more easily. And the guards forced the captives to carry the heavier items before killing them upon arrival. You remember that?
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
That made me, like, I don't know why that bothered me more than anything.
Right.
Like, you have hope that maybe.
Because you're helping them out, you know.
Yeah.
Maybe
I'll just be an exile person.
Maybe they'll just let me run away or something, you know.
Right? Like, whatever. And they're, like, using you directly to your death.
Right.
Like, that's just, I don't know, the tragedy of that.
Yeah.
So then we get into the execution of the officials and the leaders of the rebellion. The chief priests, top army officers, and leading palace officials were all executed summarily.
Wow. Like,
boom, 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 dead.
Hmm.
Okay, you're done.
Yep.
So then we get into the register of the final phase of exile. And the last bit of verse 30 reads, all the persons were 4,600. And we were like, oh, that's
it? Small amount, yeah.
Yeah. So the smallness of his numbers compared with those given in the book of 2 Kings, because we also got a number of exiles from 2 Kings.
Okay.
So this small number indicates that Jeremiah likely only counted the heads of the families, meaning the adult males. And thus, this only represents a small portion of the exiles.
Got it.
So the wives, the children, their servants, and all that were likely not counted.
Okay.
So that raises the number drastically.
Yeah.
Which, you know, that kind of makes sense because that's how they did their counting of people, their census stuff back then.
Right.
So the head of household thing, and it's always the dude.
Yeah.
So then we get into the end of the chapter, a small ray of hope seen in Joaquin and an improved situation in Babylon.
Yeah.
So evil Merodach, the son of Nebuchadnezzar in 561 BCE, the year of his ascension to the throne of Babylon, which was in the 37th year of the captivity and the 191st year from the building of Rome, ordered Joaquin to be taken out of prison, promoted him to a place of honor in the Babylonian palace, and treated him kindly for the remainder of his life. A sign for the captive Jews that God had not forgotten them and that he was still in control of their affairs. And it gave them hope that they would yet be released and return to their homeland.
Mm.
The end.
Okay.
All so right. We are officially done with reading Jeremiah and all the Q&As for it.
Right. We still do have the wrap up and contradiction, though.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we're going to do a wrap up and contradiction still.
Yep.
I'm not making any promises because this has been a wonky, weird
situation.
Few days here with how much research we've had to do.
Mm-hmm.
But we're going to, I think we're going to try to get out for sure at least an episode tomorrow, if not two.
Yeah. I think we're going to try to finish up Jeremiah altogether tomorrow so that we can start the next book, I believe, is Lamentations. We want to start that on Monday.
Right, right. So not saying for sure that we'll get it done, but
that's the
goal.
Be
on the lookout for new episodes is all I'm saying.
Yeah.
So thank you guys for sticking with us through these last few days. And I hope you really enjoyed the work we put into this because this was actually a lot of research for wife and a lot of impatience for me for wife. So she had to deal with a lot of things because I was getting, you know, irritated.
I said this the last episode, you kept coming in and being like, how much longer? And I kept saying one more hour at least.
Yeah.
And it kept being that way for, you know, days.
Yeah. So everybody congratulate wife on finishing up this wonderful Q&A. And we will see you guys tomorrow, more than likely, for the wrap up and possibly the contradictions also.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Until then, we'll see you guys.
Bye.
Hey, wife, I guess that's the end.
But husband, that's just sad.
It doesn't have to be. We are on lots of social media platforms like Twitter. Our handle there is sacrilegious_D.
For D's nuts.
Oh my God. Stop doing that. Anyway, we're also on Facebook, Instagram, and Pinterest. There's a link to all of our social media sites at our website.
Ooh, we have a website?
Yeah, it's sacrilegiousdiscourse.com, where you can also find a link to our merch shop.
We have a merch shop?
Yep. We have podcast-themed clothing, mugs, notebooks, and more, as well as an atheist and science-themed products.
Wow, our fans should really go check that out right now.
Definitely. They can get in touch with us by sending an email to sacrilegiousdiscourse@gmail.com. But before they do that, we could really use some help.
Oh yeah? With what?
Well, it's not free running the podcast, and we need some financial support in order to get better equipment, which will free up time so we can concentrate on our podcast and our fans.
Okay, so what should they do?
Head over to patreon.com/sacrilegiousdiscourse and sign up as a contributor on our podcast. Supporters there receive additional bi-weekly episodes that we record just for our Patreon members for as little as $2 a month.
Also, we'd really appreciate it if you would like and subscribe on whatever platform you're using.
And Apple Podcast reviews help us out tremendously.
Like and subscribe. Leave an Apple review. Join us on Twitter. Support us on Patreon. That's a lot of instructions. Don't forget to say thanks.
Thanks.
Okay, bye.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.